Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Minutes from now on Grant and Danny, Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports will join us. We will ask him and discuss last night's national championship game, Alabama 26-23 winners over Georgia. Thanks to Pete for the update. Lonzo Ball's game is impressive. He's fun to watch. He's averaging 7 boards and 7 assists a night to go along with his 10.2 points. He cannot shoot. He's shooting about 30% from three-point range.
Yeah, it's gross.
35% from the floor, 48% from the free throw line. He's just a terrible shooter with an ugly shot. But I do like the way he plays. And the dude, I'm not going to say he's almost averaging a triple-double, but 10-7-7 is pretty impressively filled out stat line every single night.
It's not nothing. I mean, again, everyone acts like he's this big bust or failure because the amount of scrutiny on him because of his clown shoe parent is obviously unfair. I mean, that was the thing. Is I feel bad for the kid because all he's ever done is what he's supposed to do. He tries. You know what I mean? He's trying to get better as a basketball player and trying to live his basketball life and, of course, is overshadowed by this reality TV boob that we embrace.
Speaking of which, ESPN cannot stop talking to LaVar Ball. They seek him out. I mean, they basically have like TMZ-esque coverage where when he walks out of his house, they've got a reporter there to shove a microphone in front of his face. So they sent somebody to do a sit-down with LaVar Ball because it's been 3 weeks since we've heard from him, and God forbid we're not clamoring for every ounce of ratings from the masses and the idiots who watch this stuff. So they sent a reporter to sit down with him. They have this sit-down interview, then publish a bunch of his comments where, among other things, he says that Luke Walton has lost the team, that the players don't like playing for him. By a lot of accounts, just foolish, ridiculous, nonsensical.
Of course, yeah.
Untrue things being said about what's going on in the Lakers locker room. Even if they were true for the record, just some parent of a player saying them is a bad look for a network just to go interview some guy's dad who doesn't like Luke Walton, who is a loudmouth, who's been wrong about a lot of his assessments in the past. This is the same guy, remember. What was his comment about the race of the players and why they didn't win a national title? Do you remember that?
Something. Something about too many white guys. But again, I don't respond to any of his individual comments
but,
in terms of argument.
But my point is, this guy is not, when he talks basketball, someone that we need to believe or listen to. He's just a guy saying loud, opinionated things.
Of course.
So Rick Carlisle, who's the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, stepped up to the mic and was the first of a bunch of coaches over the last couple days to basically go in on ESPN and to go in on LaVar Ball. He is apparently among the coaches, he's a veteran, he's one of the leaders of, like, the Coaches Association.
Right, he's the president of their Coaches Association.
So I guess he felt like he was the one to step up because Luke Walton's a kid coach by standards. He's so young, just finished playing. By the way, already has helped get a team to the NBA Finals and is an outstanding coach by most people's accounts around the NBA. Here was Carlisle calling out the network for their coverage of LaVar Ball.
They should look at their sources and do a better job of determining whether they have any merit or any validity. Or are they just blowhard loudmouths? That's what I'm saying. You got that?
Well, guess what? He is a blowhard and a loudmouth, and he doesn't have any validity. But they don't care because they know that a few extra people are going to turn on their TVs and they need all the ratings they can get. So speaking of ESPN, Carlisle was talking about the network and their conversation with LaVar Ball, and he actually said that this is a bad thing for the NBA
yes.
because coaches no longer are going to trust networks.
Printing an article where the father of an NBA player has an opinion that is printed as anything like legitimate erodes trust. It erodes the trust that we've built with ESPN, and our coaches are upset because Luke Walton does not deserve that.
No, frankly, he does not. Carlisle went one step further in assessing this I'll use air quotes here, story from ESPN.
Right.
To have to deal with these kinds of ignorant distractions, you know, is deplorable.
Steve Kerr, a day later, yesterday, who is one of the leaders among all coaches on pretty much all social issues. He's very candid, and he loves talking about politics.
Thoughtful guy.
Very much thoughtful. I agree. Sometimes maybe too thoughtful, because if you just want to hear about the NBA from Steve Kerr, you're getting a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we need to not want people to run for president just because we like what they say in a press conference. That's our new favorite thing to do. Everyone's saying Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich should run for president. I guess they're going to run against Oprah, who is going to try to replace Donald Trump. How about we don't do any of that? But this was Steve Kerr on the LaVar Ball saga.
You know, where we're going is we're going away from covering the game, and we're getting closer to just sensationalized news. And it's not even news, really. It's just complete nonsense. But if you package that irrational nonsense with some glitter and some ribbon, people are going to watch.
And they are, is the problem. And that's why ESPN cannot stop. They cannot quit LaVar Ball. He has a great comp here that he used for what Ball has become.
Somewhere, I guess it's in Lithuania, LaVar Ball is laughing at all of us. People are eating out of his hands for no apparent reason other than, you know, he's become like the Kardashian of the NBA or something, and that sells. And that's what is true in politics and entertainment and now in sports. It doesn't matter if there's any substance involved with an issue. It's just, can we make it really interesting for no apparent reason? There's nothing interesting about that story.
I love this from Steve Kerr.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, LaVar Ball might be a genius, actually, just because he preys on the stupidity of everybody else. He preys on the stupidity of the masses. People do this. Sometimes to get to very powerful places in this country. But it happens all of the time. And it's happening more and more and more. And it's just accepted. And it is infuriating. And the guy that never gets talked about in any of this is Lonzo Ball, who said that he didn't even know what his dad had said in the ESPN interview before he was first asked about it.
I didn't even see it. Allie just told me about it right now. Like I said, he's going to speak his mind. He's not going
to change. He's going to speak his mind. Danny, do you realize that the Lakers have had multiple sit-down, kind of come-to-Jesus, please, please, please stop doing this, conversations with this guy? This is why I wouldn't have drafted Lonzo Ball. And I got laughed at on this show by different callers and stuff saying, you're going to pass up on a great player because of his dad? Yes, because I'm not going to deal with this stupidity. I'm not going to deal with this foolishness. I do not suffer or tolerate clowns. I don't do it when I'm trying to run in a professional outfit. And I don't want my coach subjected to his lunacy. So no, I would not draft Lonzo Ball. I would never employ him as long as his dad is in any way tied to him.
So what it depends upon then, if you're the Lakers making a decision, is do I depend upon the outlets that cover our game? Do I depend upon the people that are going to give this Jerry Springer guest a platform to do the right thing? And my answer then is no. So I understand your perspective. Does that make sense? I go, if we lived in the world that we should 20 plus years ago, where again, this is a fringe personality that would only have one camera from Hard Copy in front of him as he mouthed off, and his biggest publicity would be in the National Enquirer or something to that effect, this wouldn't be a distraction. This would be nothing. As Isaiah Thomas said, we've been dealing with crazy stage parents forever. You guys are just finding out about it now. This is just the latest of them. There are probably a million of these that have come before, and more will come after.
There's never been anything like this because of the climate.
Because of the climate now. So I can understand that perspective of saying, I'm going to pass on a player because of where we are. I don't trust ESPN to do the right thing.
Would you employ Lonzo Ball?
I would, simply because and again, as I said, I would have drafted him first overall when he was coming out of the draft, because I think the player might be special.
I wouldn't have drafted him 20th overall.
It hasn't worked just yet, but we're still halfway through a rookie season. I'm not writing his epitaph just yet. But Steve Kerr went on to say a number of things that I think are dead right. And this is not about, to me, Lonzo Ball. Because, again, I refuse to debate or argue with someone that doesn't have standing. I want to understand, and I want everyone else to follow me here, we give standing to those that shouldn't. Whether it's Nazis being interviewed like they're regular people. They're not, okay? Whether they're extremists or whatever else. We are now treating, as I said, these Jerry Springer guests as if all ideas are fine and relevant. There's some that are easily dismissible.
That's my favorite thing.
This
and by
is one.
Favorite thing, I mean least favorite thing. When these news channels now will be debating something scientific, And they will have a scientific researcher who has spent 50 years studying this in a split screen with someone who's just got a crazy opinion who has never studied that field.
Right.
But this is now one of the leaders in this field because their truth is the real truth according to a group of people.
Yeah. The truth is not subjective. Let's always remember that. So my fault and criticism, and Steve Kerr's dead right about this, he went on to say this. People must care or ESPN wouldn't be spending, you know, whatever they're spending to send reporters to Lithuania while laying off people who are writing really substantial stories. People like Ethan Strauss or Mark Stein are getting laid off. So again, this is not a condemnation of ESPN. It's not. It's a societal issue, and it's been going on for many, many years, and it's, I think, really invading the sports world now, and that is 100% correct. That is 100% correct. It's why I won't watch any of the dumb reality shows. It's why I don't keep up with any Kardashians. It's why any Real Housewife of any place. It is the downfall of rational, correct thought. It our inability to distinguish noise from substance has eroded to the point where we, again, we stick a mic in this person's face as if he's on the same playing field as a coach, as an analyst, as a player. He is not. He
but
is
why
a
can't
fringe
people connect
lunatic.
These dots? Why can't people see that this is all feeding from the exact same bucket? If you bought shoes that you probably didn't get, by the way, if you bought one of these T-shirts, if you wore one of the Johnny Manziel money T-shirts, if you, people don't understand that they're contributing to this downfall.
Of course.
With every clapping seal laughter they have. Oh, that was a hilarious promo he just cut on the NBA draft. He shouldn't have been interviewed. People cannot seem to figure this out. We'll open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines for you at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Question for you to answer would be, you're the Lakers. What do you do now? If you are Magic Johnson and you're running the Lake Show, how do you handle this? Because you have tried privately to take care of this by talking to LaVar Ball, and it hasn't worked. And now this thing is coming apart at the seams already, and you're part of the way through year one with him. What would you do to fix this situation? Brant and Danny on the Fan. Brant, Danny, 106.7 The Fan. At 11:30 this morning, we're going to be welcoming Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports on to the show to look back at last night's national championship game. Right now, we're talking LaVar Ball. You're the Lakers. How would you handle his public comments that aren't going away? And every time someone sticks a microphone in his face, which is constantly, by the way, an incessant fervor and an attention paid to him that just will not die, he is saying something that is having to be cleaned up by the coaching staff, by Luke Walton, by his son who's being asked questions, by his teammates who are being asked questions. What do you do? I've had the meetings with him. Danny, I don't know what I can do other than calling him in and saying, listen, this is going to start to affect Lonzo. We are going to have to consider moving on from him if this continues to get worse. I would legitimately tell him that. We want him to be a Laker for the long term. We think he's a really good player. We need you to stop acting the way that you are. Because in a perfect world, as you said, LaVar Ball isn't the problem here as much as the media companies that keep giving him a platform are. So he is probably the lesser of the issues, and the networks are the bigger issues. In a perfect world, he's never being asked these questions, but he's going to continue to be asked these questions.
Sure, he gets a platform, which that is wrong. You can't fix that if you're the Lakers. Here's
honestly,
what you do.
Don't you think if we could get LaVar Ball on our show tomorrow, I know for a fact I would say no. I know for a fact you would say no.
Of course.
I don't think so, but maybe CK would step in, and he's never done this before.
We'd probably be overruled, honestly. Yeah. It would be good for the show for you guys to do.
You have to have him on the show.
Because it's catnip. Everyone loves to do it.
I don't know if he would do that. Actually, can you go get CK real quick? I want to know if he would make us have LaVar Ball on the show.
Here is what you do. Here is what you do for the Los Angeles Lakers. Because they've taken a position, kind of the same way I would approach this initially, which is to say, we are not going to address this because these are not worthwhile comments. This is nonsense. We will not address nonsense. The same way that if some schlub writes a blog that says, Luke Walton should be fired and they should start Joseph Randle and play with point guard, you wouldn't address that either, right? You can't address every one of these different things and these views. Now it's gotten to the point that it is problematic, as you've alluded to. I would say, here's a rule. If you mention the Los Angeles Lakers, if you mention Luke Walton, if you mention the front office, if you say anything in public, your son sits the next game and he will not play. your son will not play every time you do this. That rule is now in place forever. You will not speak publicly about the Los Angeles Lakers. You can promote your brand. That's your right as an American citizen. This is our rule now. We drafted your son because we think he can play.
I love that.
You were in the way. When you say Lakers, when you say coach, when you say Walton, anything that we deem close, he sits the next game.
I love that.
Because
bench his ass.
We're 12-27, and we don't have a shot anyway. We're in developmental mode. We're probably selling off our best players at the damn deadline. We're building around your son. We will not do that because you willed his butt to the Lakers. You don't get what you want the instant you speak about us. That's from here on out, and I do that this morning.
I love that. Here's the problem with you doing that. You're dealing with a maniac who's so desperate for attention, he would turn around and very publicly state that this ultimatum was just given to him.
Oh, I know.
That his son's going to be benched every single time. And now you've got a bigger problem on your hands.
I would steal his thunder and have a press conference. I'd even invite him to it. So you're welcome to come and watch me tell you this. I'll turn. This is just for Clown Shoe. Hey, Clown Shoe, if you do this again, the kid sits. One time talking, one time sitting. We can go on. We'll do this as long as you want.
In perpetuity.
Because this
I love it.
Will stop.
Our program director, CK, is here. So here's my question. Danny and I were just talking about this. I would not have, like, if someone called us tomorrow, a publicist, and was like, hey, we're trying to get the word out in D.C. about our shoes and our T-shirts that we never sent to JP. By the way, never forget you employ someone who bought a big
never
ball
forget
and brand
that.
T-shirt. Please never forget that.
Did it to annoy another coworker, which I totally get, and so do both of you.
Wait, he did that?
He did that just to annoy, I believe, Cakes. He didn't want that. He just wanted to annoy Cakes.
Was it to troll Cakes or Jason?
But
Cakes?
JP, maybe it's more EB. EB, like, likes the guy.
Well, yeah, but he has terrible decision-making. I mean,
Is he serious?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
We need to get Eric Bickle on the show at some point to talk about LaVar. I don't even want to do that.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
I don't want to do it.
Have I ever asked you guys to talk about LaVar Ball?
Not one time. And for the record, we, correctly, I believe, had a decision we made ultimately that we were not going to talk about LaVar Ball on the show. We actually didn't use his name for several months.
And I'm aware of that and totally fine with it.
So many stories came and went with us never having addressed it because we didn't want to. This, to me, is a big enough story with all these NBA coaches doing it.
The coaches spoke about it, et
cetera. And to me, the story is more now what the coaches are saying than just LaVar Ball. But here is the question. If his publicist called us and said, hey, we want to get LaVar Ball on with you guys tomorrow, and we said, there's no way we want to talk to that guy, no chance, would you make us have him on the show just because that would move the needle?
No, I would not. I would not. No. Now, if you guys said, I want to have this guy on and crush him, then fine, do it. But no, I would not make you do that. Absolutely not. No.
My buddy interviewed for a radio job a couple months back, and he was asked by the program director, like, what are your thoughts on LaVar Ball? Mm-hmm. And the guy was like, oh, I would never have him on any of my shows. And it was like a sticking point between he and the program director about basically like how dumb this dude was that was trying to get this job because he wouldn't want to give him the platform. Well, and at that point, he was the biggest story in sports.
I think it's an interesting question for the audience because the assumption that Steve Kerr made, and I think a lot of people make, is that the audience wants that. That, you know, Steve Kerr said, I don't blame ESPN because clearly there's a market for that. I don't know. Is it really that big of a market? Like, we live in a world of data. Where's the data on that? Has anyone polled anybody about that? Like, is that true? Is there really
Does
that
anybody
big of
watch
audience?
His Facebook show? Remember they do this Facebook family show?
Yeah, it's the same phenomenon where I know my wife and millions of other women watch these terrible Bravo shows because it makes them feel better about themselves. They hate watch these shows where they don't like anybody on the show. And to me, when there's nothing redeemable about a show, I don't watch it, but they love it. I keep saying it's catnip to them. People hate watch that stuff as much as the boobs that love it and like quote cliches. They're more, the people that are interested in it aren't necessarily interested because it's quality. Quality is out the window. They're interested in it because it makes them feel good about themselves, or it's a yard sale. It's why reality shows are now the norm instead of the exception. Because of that, you feel secondhand better because someone else is
quantifiably
in front of
aren't
you.
The numbers for ESPN better when LaVar Ball's on a segment than when he isn't? Why else would they be so desperate to get him on all the time?
I don't know. They may be on some of the shows that I would never watch,
and maybe that's
well, maybe that's the distinction. Yeah. Maybe that's the distinction. Like, I'm sorry, you're losing part of an audience that would typically have watched ESPN because you're putting a show like that on the air. So I guess you're getting the people that watch that show, but you're not getting the people that would just watch ESPN. Typically.
That's actually, you know, it's a great question. Something we could take some calls on as the hour continues. 800-636-1067. Steve Kerr is saying that the audience does exist. They're out there. And he's saying that you guys enjoy seeing LaVar Ball. Is that the case? Also want to get into the College Football National Championship with our buddy Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports next. We'll do that in moments on Grant and Danny.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What a game last night. Hopefully you guys got to enjoy the national final. Alabama coming back from down 13-0 at the half, 20-3 in the third quarter to beat the Georgia Bulldogs 26-23. Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports is our guest to break down what happened. Let's start with the big decision of the night. Nick Saban at halftime benches Jalen Hurts, who'd won 25 of 27 starts, one interception all season, and he went to a freshman I didn't know anything about when I saw him take his first snap, Tua Tagovailoa, and he played a whale of a second half with three touchdowns. Your thoughts on that decision and the way it worked out for Alabama?
Yeah, and thanks for having me on. I think the surprise would have been if Nick didn't change to Tua, because at that point they really had nothing going for them. Jalen Hurts, as good as he is, and you mentioned the numbers, just is not an elite thrower. His completion percentage was down this year. His yards were down this year. They relied on him more as a runner. He had most carries on the team. And so at an elite level against an elite defense, he had just been totally smothered. And Tua wasn't, look, he was a five-star. He was one of the top five recruits in the country when they got him. And he answered the bell. You know, I think it may have been nothing more than maybe just switching a righty for a lefty, now that I think about it. He had to execute plays, but he wasn't great for the entire second half. He made a great play to end the game, but he kind of eased into the role of leading them back.
Dennis, that's going to be the story, obviously. He's going to the freshman and then the freshman connection and how Alabama comes back in this ball game. I think lost in all this is that Georgia scored just that one early touchdown and then just kind of couldn't sustain anything. They didn't give enough carries to Michelle, in my opinion. He was the hot hand.
Yes.
He was out-carried by Nick Chubb, who averaged 1.4 yards per carry. I think Georgia did as much to lose this thing as Alabama did to win it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, at 20-7 lead with 6 minutes left in the third quarter, Georgia should have sewed that thing up, especially with the way they did defense all year. We're talking about the top defense playing against, playing against a freshman quarterback, protected by a true freshman backup left tackle who had replaced an All-American. The leading rusher was a freshman, Najee Harris. The leading receivers in both yards and catches in both two freshmen. You know, as much as we want to make this not Nick's genius, There was desperation mixed in. You know, let's try Tua. Let's try Najee Harris. Let's try some other guy. And everything worked at the right time. But I do think Alabama had to execute. But there is a point to be made that Georgia got a little conservative.
I'm gonna throw Dennis on hold real quick, Darn. Let's see if we can work on that phone connection. Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports breaking down the national championship game with us. Jake Fromm, 16 of 32 passing for 232 yards and a pair of interceptions. And as the game went on, he struggled. And as it got tighter and there was obviously a championship on the line, you could tell that he started gripping the football a little bit tighter and some of his passes were a little bit less accurate. Dennis, right. Let's talk Jake Fromm for a second. Thanks for hopping back on with us here.
Yeah.
What do you think changed as the game went on? Was that just him thinking about the big picture as a freshman, or did Alabama's defense make some adjustments?
Well, they hardly had the ball in the fourth quarter, Georgia, as Alabama made their run. I took nothing away from Nick Fromm. I thought he was fantastic. He made all the throws. There were two interceptions, I think. Yeah, obviously there were two interceptions, which hurt. You're only going to go to the well too many times. I think your point about not running Michelle more would have is on point. It would have run the clock more. It would have taken pressure off Fromm. And it remains, Auburn remains as the only team this season to put the game on Fromm's back. He looked vulnerable starting as a true freshman. And only in that 40-17 loss in November did a team stop the run completely and put it on him. That didn't happen last night. I thought he was pretty good.
At Dennis Dodd, CBS on Twitter. Great follow for college football information. So as Georgia kind of has to deal with what happened, and this is a fan base, and you could go into this a little bit, Dennis, it's been so frustrated. They've been so close. They had such good teams, and it just, again, it's kind of ripped away from them. Are they able to bounce back and be, you know, kind of this perennial power now? I mean, I know they've always been good, but I'm talking about this level. Kirby Smart seemed to think so in his press conference last night, saying basically, hey, we've arrived. We're here. We're not going anywhere. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's the second-day story or one of them. Georgia's not going anywhere. And in fact, we could see a rematch at some point in the playoff next year between these two teams, because Georgia, I think, rather easily is going to win the East in 2018. They lose Michelle and Chubb, but they've recruited great at running back. They've got Dalvin Cook's brother. They got this kid out of North Carolina who's a five-star. Fromm is going to be even better. Jacob Eason just transferred, I think I read, to Washington, but they've got Justin Fields, somehow the top player, not just quarterback, the top player in the country, came to Georgia to compete with Jake Fromm. So they are going to be really, really good and are not going to go away at all.
Our guest is Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports on Grant and Danny in the wake of a 26-23 overtime thriller for the national final. As far as Alabama goes moving forward, what kind of career should we anticipate for Tua under center? What's next for Jalen Hurts? I mean, there were so many freshmen making plays for them late last night. I have to imagine they're going to have a chance in their sixth in 10 years next season.
Yeah. And then, you know, what happens with Nick then? Is that a walk-off for him when he beats Bear Bryant's record or not? But, yeah, to your question, look, there's going to be a quarterback battle. And what happens when, I think, as we all assume, you know, Tua eventually wins it. You know, they'll do the dance and play it out and go into August. And you got to think Tua, who I just think is more dynamic. I don't, again, having seen him, I don't think he's a polished thrower yet. He made a great throw to win the game last night. But Jalen Hurts' downside is that, at least against elite competition, he can't get the ball down the field with his arm. And Tua reads defense is better. If you saw that last play where he looked off the safety, it didn't even look left. He threw it left and knew that Devontae White was going to be there in the corner. I don't know why. Second and 26 from the 41, and you know Alabama doesn't have a kicker, that you're not just, you know, your heels aren't on the 10-yard line and daring somebody to beat you. Somehow he got behind that guy. But it was a fantastic throw. He dropped it down the silo.
Dennis, what do you think this means for the committee? And I argued that Alabama, even though they won the whole thing because they were the best team, I still don't think they should have been there. Should have been Central Florida, or it should have been Ohio State for me. I wonder how you feel about that. But B, will they use this as kind of validation for picking whatever methodology they see fit instead of the stated criteria?
I think this playoff validated what they did this year. I mean, we can criticize other things. I think it validated what they did, because I'm not Monday morning quarterbacking this thing. I said on the day they picked the team that it wouldn't have been a credible playoff without Alabama in it. Because if you just use the eye test all season, Alabama was a better team than Ohio State. If it was an EKG, Alabama had a steady heartbeat throughout the season. They were 1-2 for most of the season. Ohio State, you know, kind of spiked. You know, there's really no excuse for the Iowa game, you know, where you give up 55 points on the road. It doesn't look like you ever got off the bus. And obviously that's what killed them. And then Central Florida, I think Central Florida's argument was not so much getting in the top four, that it is incongruous that the FBS's only unbeaten team has nowhere to prove it. I think their problem was the committee ranked them 12th at the end. And I thought that was a slap in the face. And Scott Frost, who was here to accept the Coach of the Year award, said as much. He said, we were insulted. You know, it was almost like the committee said, you're playing touch while everybody else is playing tackle. I think UCF would have matched up and given most every team in the country a game. And to rank them 12th as the only undefeated team, I thought was a bit insulting.
I think it's well said, and I completely agree with your point about Alabama. Had the playoffs have happened without them participating at all, I, To me, it wouldn't have made any sense. Dennis, thanks so much for the time. Great analysis, as always, and it was a blast last night watching all of your content online. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports here on Grant and Danny. Our double play is next. I've got a story that is going to creep you out a little bit. What do you have?
I got to find something besides that because I'm very intrigued by that story as well, my friend, because that is a thing.
All right. So, Danny, we'll get to that. We'll do our double play next. We call it our double play. It is time, my friend.
I'm going to go quick because you've got a really cool story. Long and short is this. I was owed money by somebody for a long time. I'm talking about May of last year. I was owed this money. Just patiently waiting, asking emissaries, various people to get it. I finally received the check 5 days ago. So nearly 9 months after I was due said monies for a service performed, I received it. Not complaining, just simply very happy to receive it. I go to the bank, to the ATM, and I slide the check in for deposit time. This is a normal standard procedure.
Is it weird? I've never done that.
It is weird to me.
I always take my checks inside human interaction.
I understand that. I am supposed to have a seamless procedure. Of course, enter this, wherein I did not. The machine, the automatic teller machine, makes a lot of noise. A lot of that feeling like some sort of conveyor belt's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's not really doing anything. It's not doing the thing it's supposed to do. It's supposed to take a look. Thing pops right in and goes, hey, is this the right amount? Just click yes or no. Let us know. It's not doing that. Nothing is happening. Error message takes place. Error message on the screen. We cannot complete your transaction at this time. This, so far, still is not terrible. This is not good. But there are other ATMs. The check does not come back to me. A receipt pops out, just letting me know, we can't complete this. Sorry, the ATM is out of order. Of course, the bank itself inside is closed, so I can't go in because why would they close at 5 p.m.? Banks should always be open, by the way, the same as dry cleaners, everything else. You were there to serve me. I understand you can't post a transaction to the following day, but please be open. Things need to be open. Things closing, terrible, that are customer-based. Please be open. They're not open, so I have no recourse. On the receipt, it gives me a phone number to call. This is my nightmare. This is what I don't want to do. I purposely do things so I avoid these kinds of interactions. I'm on hold. I select different options. When a person comes on, I forget his name because he says it real fast, goes through his spiel. Tell me what your problem is. I don't know. Sorry, I just want to deposit my money. Please let me know what's going on. I'm asked all sorts of questions. I don't know the answer to these questions. I have only the information that I have. I'm told that I cannot be helped at this point. I have to call another number and call some other person when I have all this information that they want from me when I'm in an ATM machine rectified. The long and short is, so many minutes on the phone, it gets handled, it's done. This is my absolute least favorite thing about our society. Tell me what I did wrong. I received money, I deposited the money. I have to do extra work to cover for you.
Right.
Where is my compensation for that? This is something that I want from all businesses everywhere at all times. I am not a professional money depositor. I'm just a person that's running errands. I have other things to do. I have to feed a human life. I've got all sorts of things I have to take care of, my responsibilities. I've done nothing wrong. You have erred. I received nothing except for hold time and confusing, panicked answers from a man who doesn't care about me or my situation. I hate dealing with customer service more than anything. It's why everything should be online. No mail, no talking to anybody. Fix my problem immediately. And if you put me to trouble, give me something right away to let me know that you care. They don't. I'm furious. And all I'm doing is pissing and moaning like an impotent jerk, hanging out on this radio program, but I'm still irritated by it 5 days later. Back to you.
There's a lot I liked there. It reminds me a little bit of when you got really mad that laundromats had to close on Sundays and that they weren't open.
Dry
because
cleaners.
That's the day. Oh, sorry. Dry cleaners.
Service industry.
That's the day that you need them open, so they shouldn't have a day off. Remember that argument
should
you
have,
made?
Should have, yeah. You shouldn't be closed. Should 100% not be closed.
It's hilarious.
It's absurd.
It is time for my double play here. A dead man in Spain shocked doctors after waking up during his autopsy.
Oh, well.
Do you know what the word catalepsy means?
I don't until I read the story.
Catalepsy is the scariest thing ever. It occurs when a person's vital signs slow down so much that they're undetectable, which can lead to them being mistakenly presumed dead. So the story is that this guy named Gonzalo Montoya Jimenez, is a 29-year-old in Spain, was a prisoner located in one of the highest security areas of his jail. According to this news outlet, Jimenez was discovered to be deceased in his prison cell early one morning after having reported feeling ill the previous day. So he said that he was sick. The next day they came, and he did not show any signs of life. He had failed to show up for the daily morning count. They went to his cell. He looked purple, apparently, as they attended the scene. Skin after death, I guess, has that tone, according to the expert medical folks that looked at him. When a pulse was not found, the prisoner was placed in a body bag and left in a cold mortuary after he was pronounced dead until doctors carried out an autopsy to discover his cause of death. So they put him in the bag. They get him out of the jail. They take him to the morgue. They draw all over him where they're going to cut into him. And basically, as they are about to cut into this guy at the morgue, they start to hear some wrestling from underneath of, like, the sheet or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Initially, it started out as, like, some light sleeping and, like, a snoring sound. And the guy comes to and asks where his wife is as they're about to cut into him.
Can you imagine?
Guy, this is one of the all-time fears.
There is no amount of money that would get me to be the autopsy doctor.
Of course not.
Now, those guys that do it, God bless them. It's a public service. It's hard work. Dr. Benanamalu was doing that, and he just wants you to tell the truth. You could not get me to
do that. Tell the truth.
You could not get me to do that, basically because of that fear. One in a trillion, the cadaver sits up. I'm out.
Not only that, though, okay, which is terrible. My other takeaway from this story is, and I know that this sounds so stupid, and it is stupid, and it's dumb, but it makes me think, like, what has anybody, you mean to tell me nobody has ever come back to life, like, hours or days after they were buried or something like that.
Like, and then just been stuck underground?
Right. In the history of the world, dude. It's never happened once.
Oh, man.
Is that what you're telling me?
I can't tell you.
Like somebody was in a coma, let's say.
I can't tell you that.
We thought they were dead. We pronounced them dead.
We got the...
We have a quick funeral.
Yep.
We do it like a couple days later or whatever. They're now buried, and they just came back alive underground.
Man.
Do you think it's ever happened?
Yes.
It has to have.
It has to have happened.
Guy,
it has to have happened.
Do you understand how big, it's not a fear because I've never thought of it before today, but now how much I'm going to think about this? This is the automatic grounds for a cremation. That's what this is.
But here's the thing.
You have to be cremated.
We were arguing about this during the break. When you got close to the fire, that's going to jar you awake. That might be the worst way. Because if you came back to just for that split second before you're burned, you know how bad being burned hurts? You ever burned your finger on a pot? Hurts like hell. That's your whole skin, man.
But you didn't come back to, let's say. Somehow, some way, like, it's not about what is going on around you. It's just about, like, the moment where you come back to life or whatever happens to happen after that.
What needs to be standard, and this is going to, now, you know what, I'm not going to say
this. Cremation has to be the play.
No, because you might wake up with the fire touching
you. Can you tell me that there is a 0.0000% chance I'm not going to come back to in my grave?
Here's what's going to happen. I can't tell you that, but statistically, that's what it would round to. You see what I'm saying? It's like a 0.00000001 chance that you're back.
Then
and
I
that
can't,
means statistically,
then I can't be buried.
That's the plus or minus, and it's zero.
I need the no point. I need a no one anywhere in that number.
I get it.
Or else I can't be buried.
There's got to be
a
move.
You understand how claustrophobic I am?
Of
you get
I
it?
I definitely get it.
Do you know that I almost passed out on a metro once because people were too close to me?
You would not have been able to do the Kill Bill, Pai Mei, 6-inch punch in front of your face to get out of there like Beatrix Kiddo did.
Guy. If I woke up in a grave, I was about to say, like, I would be furious. Nothing would matter.
Would you be upset?
I'd be a little bit irritable.
Here is what needs to happen for me. You think I'm gone. I trust medical doctors almost implicitly. You need to inject me with whatever you inject people to take them humanely when they're being put to death for execution. One last be sure. Where you inject me with the pain-free thing, even if you don't think I'm feeling any pain because I'm dead, inject me with that thing that would seize and stop everything no matter what. I don't want anything painful. I don't want to be put into the fire and wake up for a split second before I'm incinerated and my last sensation is pain. Give me the pain-free injection right in my dead neck. You think I'm dead?
That's
fine.
A good idea, actually.
Double down and double yes. Dead me. Double dead me to make sure it's over.
Dead, dead, dead me. I want to be dead so many times.
You can't
times
triple
over.
Dead a double dead.
By the way, I don't know what or why, but like five people are on hold right now all of a sudden who wanted to talk about this.
That have died and come back?
Maybe. We don't have time to get into the calls because we're going to the Beltway Blitz at noon, but if you guys want to tweet us, I'm at Grant H. Paulson.
At Funny Danny.
You're listening to The Fan.
Hey, guys, Ted Britt Ford. It's a good place to go buy a car as we get over the morbid talk. I've gone to Ted Britt Ford two times, got myself two Ted Britt Fords in the Hooray family. Right now, some pretty good deals are available to you. You're going to get paid to trade up to 130% of Kelley Blue Book value. There's a value, right? 100% would be a good deal. You get 130% for your trade-in. You can lease a new F-150, you know, the number one truck in America, for $249 a month or up to $11,000 off the MSRP. How about up to $10,000 off the MSRP on a 2018 Ford Explorer? You can lease one for just $230 a month. Oh, is that a good deal, Danny? Yes, it is, radio listener. How about an Escape, little miniature SUV, the small SUV, right? Cutting your SUV starter kit as low as $16,999 or just $150 a month for a lease deal. That's an absurd lease deal. Gotta be honest with you, that's an absurd deal. Not sure how they're making money. Tell you this, they got great customer service out there. I love them, and you will. So go see them. Fairfax, Philly, you go. Help, Danny.
Such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.